A British woman of Indian heritage thought a bit of ancient instruction might help her son tackle a modern problem. Growing up in India, a young Dr. Rashmi Mantri used an abacus to help her visually comprehend mathematics. After noticing her son Drew was struggling with math, she started employing that same ancient tool to help him after school. In just 6 days, he started showing progress with the abacus and would go on to become a regular whiz kid with numbers, with even his classmates' parents reaching out for help. Drew has now landed an apprenticeship at an international firm, Daggio, and said he reckons his teachers would be shocked by the career choice considering his difficulties with math. Now, I had an abacus as a child. I don't remember that. I don't remember it being that helpful.
Well, it was helpful to teach you timetables because it was a visual aid. One times one is, and you just got the one dot. And one times two is, and you just, because it's the one line and the one dot. So one and the one dot is what? One. Mm. One and a two dots, two. It was helpful, you know, teaching you how to, you know, add and subtract. I mean, we use the abacus quite a bit.
I just remember sliding. I'm not gonna lie to you. I just remember sliding. I don't remember adding nothing. I just slid. Well, I remember counting to 100 with it.
Yes, we taught you how to count. Use it as a counting aid.
Yeah, each line had 10 little things on.
This is what one looks like, and two, and 10, 20, and help you count by fives.
Of course.
And tens. So, do you remember the abacus, Alex?
I do.
Did you like it? Because AJ's acting like he didn't.
No, I didn't say I didn't like it. I just say I remember sliding the little beads. And that's
it was good, but I don't remember using it for man.
So what were y'all doing with it in your mind?
I told you, I slid the beads.
You were playing with it?
I was playing with it.
90% of my time with the abacus was doing this.
Exactly.
Getting all the beads to one side. Okay. Now, I do remember one time I did get them all split. Both sides, and that took a while.
Oh,
I moved each individual bead, but that's the only mad purpose the abacus ever had to me. But it's great.
Let me tell y'all something though. Just a little side note. I bought you educational toys on purpose. So when you were growing up, most of your toys had an educational purpose. Remember that bus that said your ABCs? And taught you what sounds were that each letter made.
A bus?
Yeah.
Nope. No recollection.
See? But Alex used to play with that bus all the time.
And I still don't know what you're talking about.
I know you don't. But all your toys had an educational purpose when I bought them. Your daddy bought you purely that have fun toys, not me.
So he got the train? He got the train?
The train? Yeah, the train. Well, we both agreed on the train set because Alex made it seem like he had to have a train, like he had to have air. I need train. I need truck. It's like, you do not need it. It's not food. It's not water. And they want me to go get it right now. So yeah. So we eventually got you a train set, which you didn't. Played with for very long, amazingly.
I remember having that train set every day.
Mm-hmm.
Every day.
Mm-hmm. But we talking about Christmas past now.
That is true. It's nice. He landed an internship with that.
Mm-hmm. Yep, very good.
All right. And now, back by popular demand, what had happened was.
So Alex gonna tell us what really happened?
Yeah. So, I don't know what's gonna happen because this one is straight up ridiculous. Like we've had some special stuff on here before, but this ridiculous. So according to popular science, sea urchin sperm is surprisingly useful to robotics experts. Yes, sea urchin sperm.
Stop.
It's Sperm has a unique sense of direction. The reproductive cells of many species are tuned to seek out eggs, no matter how far.
How far. I didn't know this was gonna be bad. This is not gonna go well.
It's not. I'm just trying to stop myself from laughing because I already know.
Pray, everybody out there, where your man pray now. This is gonna be rough.
Okay. No matter how far or how difficult the journey, take sea urchin sex. First, males and females will puff out clouds of sperm and egg cells into the ocean. To find and fertilize an egg in the open waters, the sperm of these spiny sea-bedded creatures follow a chemical breadcrumb trail. And engineers are tapping this clever attraction method for smarter destination-seeking robots of their own.
I'm sorry. I'm trying. I am.
A study published December 9th in the journal Physical Review E details the similarities between the trajectory of sea urchin sperm and computer systems that use a type of real-time search approach called extremum seeking. Engineers from the University of California, Irvine, and University of Michigan made a mathematical model of the sperm's pathway to better understand its behaviors. According to the authors, assessing the sea urchin's biological nature could help design miniature robots that follow cues from sources in the same way. So, Alex, I'm afraid to ask this question. What really had happened?
First off, for those of y'all that didn't understand the urchin stuff, basically what happened is that
you can't be laughing.
See now, see now.
The comedian. Laughing at his own joke before he gets it out. No. Come on now.
So basically, it's kind of like how Amazon works, except they kind of don't know until it like gets there. So basically, they make this stuff and then it becomes that cloud and then they send it out into the world and then it randomly chooses a female and then it goes inside that female and then they make children. And that's how it works.
I thought it said they both pop out clouds.
They do. But, see.
So you're thinking about it in terms of with, if it was a male and female, he would puff out some stuff and it would find its way inside of him?
Mm-hmm. Wow. Mm-hmm. Ring on the doorbell. This is a package delivery. We don't care if you want it or not. We're just gonna invade. You're gonna have some children in roughly 9 months.
This is a story, but how actual babies.
Right. Stork's sperm. Just show up at the door and play negative women. That's a scary thought. That's a scary thought. And that's what had happened. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah. Okay. That was interesting. That was certainly interesting.
Yes.
But now it's time to introduce our guests.
Oh yeah.
Oh, you need the mic. Here you go.
Like, why would you move?
Give you the
stank
eye. Mm-hmm.
So y'all already know who I am. I'm the entertainer himself, Alex T.
That's
the tension. Yeah. And our guest today, it's Miss Mary McKenzie, award-winning and number one best-selling author. Mary McKenzie is a rape kit expert, coach, advocate, sexual assault nurse examiner, registered nurse educator, and international speaker. She provides confident, compassionate, confidential coaching through the rape kit process in each state of the USA to help victims overcome the thought of being traumatized a second time and to position them as powerful self-advocates instead of becoming emotionally, mentally, spiritually, and physically shut in. She advocates for survivors through her coaching, books, speaking engagements, courses, and webinars.
All right. Hello, Miss McKenzie.
Hello, hello, hello. Thank you so much for having me today, Alex.
We're glad you could be here. We're glad you could be here. Okay. So my first question.
Well, before you do that, let me apologize for earlier. I know you were probably thinking, where are we going to go with this?
You should read the rough draft.
Oh, yeah, you should definitely.
Don't read it out loud.
Don't read what out loud?
His rough draft. Don't read that out loud.
Don't read that out loud, please.
Oh, my goodness. Yes, I didn't read it.
Yeah, it's good. It's good that you didn't, and I'm glad he didn't say that either. So my first question is, what is a rape kit?
A rape kit is the forensic exam process that a sexual assault victim goes through to collect the evidence that is turned over to law enforcement for analysis. That the DNA make link to a perpetrator and get him off the streets.
Oh.
Yeah.
That makes more sense than what I was actually thinking.
Like I thought it was just like a kid, you got your taser, your pepper spray, stuff to keep him away.
Yeah.
So you were thinking about a serial killer having a bag.
I was thinking that it was like a, it's called rape kit, but I was thinking anti-rape kit.
Basically. Oh, okay.
Right, like you got stuff to keep away from you in there. Yeah. I thought it was like an actual physical thing that you would have with you walking down the street. Somebody come up to you, bam, taser, pepper spray.
Oh, okay.
You know, something like that. But it makes more sense that it's a forensic thing. Okay, that makes sense.
And they're disappearing. Yeah, so that's what it is. And, you know, a lot of victims are like terrified of going through the process. So I'm bringing awareness. So I'll teach my clients a step-by-step process, what it involves. So, you know, even if they don't need it at the time when I see them, because their assault may have occurred years or months prior, then they can, you know, get the knowledge, be empowered to help others who may be in the position to need it.
So is that what a sexual assault nurse examiner does?
Yes. We are the specially trained nurses that care for victims holistically. We do the assessment, you know, offer therapeutic communication, guide them through the process, you know, so we use our nursing knowledge and skills to guide us in our forensic training also.
So what is that process of getting a rape kit?
The process of doing it?
Yes, ma'am.
So when the victim comes in, of course, you're attending to their emotional health, number one, making sure they're comfortable, you believe them, making sure there are no physical injuries where they may need to be medically treated. And then, you know, you go through the process of asking questions because the answers that they give guides the evidence collection. Mm. So for example, the victim may report, he or she kissed me on my neck. So we'll swab there because there's a potential for DNA evidence. Mm. Actually, I've actually had a case like that and the perpetrator's DNA was found on the swab that I collected from the victim's neck. Mm. So the step-by-step process, you do the assessment, ask questions, which includes, you know, demographic data, history and physical, you know, whatever medication they may be on, or, you know, details surrounding the incident. You don't force them to talk. They are going to give you as much information as they are comfortable with at the time. Mm. And then the process of there is a kit that it's sealed until you open it at the bedside. And then you collect from head to toe, including photographs, measuring any injuries, and so forth. And then that package, you maintain the chain of custody. So it has to be labeled date, time, initial, date, so the name of the victim, and you maintain chain of custody until it's handed off to law enforcement. So they may be storage because they may not be on scene to collect the kit right away. Often they are, but they, it's in, it's sealed, it's labeled, you sign on the label. So there'll be evidence if it's breached before the appropriate time. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So how does that work? Well, like if it's been many months before someone goes through this process, how, I guess how, what I'm asking is, how is the DNA still be there? Cause
no, you, the, no, you can't, it, there won't be evidence there months later. So I think it's up to 72 hours now. Okay. Yeah. And depending what happens in between, maybe longer. But when I say we go through that in my coaching program, the step-by-step process, it's building the knowledge for the survivor. It empowers them. This is what they would have gone through if they had sought that help at the time. Maybe they didn't want to, or they were in a position where they were just not prepared. So now they have this knowledge and they can share it with others, be an advocate for themselves and for others. I've had victims who were raped more than once. So unfortunately, perpetrators are everywhere, and victims, none of us is safe, you know, because it can happen at any time. So that's where that, you know, teaching them about it months or years later after their trauma.
So is this what you speak about at your various speaking engagements? And
yes, and talk about my journey as a survivor, how I get to where I am, the tools and resources that I employ to help me to overcome and thrive so I can be an advocate for myself and for others.
Mm-hmm. So is this what your number one best-selling book is about as well?
Yes, my award-winning number one best-selling book, Things That Keep Me Up at Night, is my memoir. I shared my journey from childhood sexual assault, because I was 11 years old at the time, and how I got to become who I am, what I do, and the people that helped me along the way. You know, the people and resources that helped me got to where I am, and how I'm advocating for others.
So what was your journey like?
Well, what happened to me was, trigger warning for anyone who may be traumatized by sexual assault. I was 11 years old, and at the incident that occurred, my first time being sexually assaulted, I was sitting in the living room with one of the ladies in my family who was giving a birth at home. And her husband was sitting beside me. So he spread the newspaper across both our legs. And then he tried to put his hand where it didn't belong underneath the paper. So he wasn't successful, of course. I just clamped my leg shut and everything. But for me, I didn't tell anyone for years until I was an adult. And that's what a lot of victims do. A lot of victims do not share this story, even if it was a child. And for many years, I was like, oh my God, that was so stupid of me. I could have screamed. I could have hit him. I could have kicked him. And there were so many people close by. I could have said something, but for some reason, I was paralyzed physically and emotionally and everything. So I didn't say anything. So I've had other incidents of sexual assault in between there. I migrated here. I became a nurse. That's what I've always wanted to do. My role model, my aunt in Jamaica, Aunt Herma, she was, although my mother was a primary caregiver, my aunt was my idol. So, and I always wanted to be a nurse like she was. She's retired now. So I got that opportunity when I migrated to the United States. And there, I went from nursing school straight to the emergency room. And being in emergency room nurse, I encountered victims of sexual violence. So that brought my experience right in front of me. You know, I have to like open up the wounds, you know, cause you try to bury it, you, because it's traumatic, especially for a child. Cause there you are. It's like, oh, should I tell someone or no? And then you kept it in. So that's forced you to children sometimes develop maladaptive behaviors as they grow up processing this or not processing this trauma. So it's unresolved because it's just in there. You're internalizing, you're thinking about it. You get angry because you're like, I should have kicked him. I should have screamed. And you feel shame too that that happened to you. So caring for victims, that kind of, opened my eyes. And I wanted to help more. But of course, first I had to help myself. I had to work on myself. So that's how I worked on myself. I associated with people who were caring for victims and the organizations that were supporting victims. And I learned tools. I journaled. I went to the Bible for healing scriptures and took care of my emotional and physical health because the mind, spirit, and body is connected. They're not separate. What affects one area of your life affects the whole thing. Because when a person is sexually assaulted and they become shut in, as I said in my, as you read in my pitch, silently hurting due to unresolved trauma, internalizing needlessly. So you like have it in, you keep it in, and it paralyzes you. And sometimes people look at the surface and they think, oh, she's fine. She's having a great life. I looked like I was having a great life, but inside it was suicide thoughts and other things that, you know, were I was battling that didn't reflect on the outside. So those were things I worked on getting myself in order before I could advocate for others. So, and now that I didn't speak up as a child, and now that I start talking about this topic, it's not mushy, and a lot of people prefer to sweep it under the rug and pretend that they don't know about the child next door that's being violated by the parent or the pastor or the church. Now that I start speaking about it, I just can't shut up. Mm-hmm. So, yes, this is my journey. So now my book has, I've received so many reports from other survivors who have read it and who have never spoken about their experiences, who are now sharing their experiences with others or with me. They may not be ready to go public like I am, but at least the process has started because once you acknowledge and start speaking, you don't feel ashamed anymore. It's like when, shortly before I published my book, I had done a podcast as on my role as a sexual assault nurse examiner. And that was the first time I shared my story publicly. And I sent the recording to family members who were hearing about it for the first time. So, and it's now, it's out there. No more shame, no more guilt. And no more anxiety. You know, sometimes they may be flashbacks, but I'm able to handle that now.
Yeah. Well, excuse me, my voice has been acting up lately, but we'll be back after the music break to talk more.
It's my life. They say they taught us to aim for nothing and look, we hit it dead on the it's butt. It's my life. They say they taught us to aim for nothing and look, we hit it dead on the butt. It's my life.
Story of my life. Flip through the chapters. Born in the maple leaf. Now I'm in Atlanta. live close to Hollywood. Raised in the drama. God bless my mama, so she named me Baraka. Parents did the splits, so I split socially. Love moms when pops broke out, he took the most of me. I hated the mirror cause I struggled with my race. Every day I wish I was white, I'm such a disgrace. I had identity struggles, that was no secret. I was lucky if my closest friends could speak English. So to fight that feeling, I made the decision. I can hate my face, I either hate the opposition. I'm hanging with the militant, reading Buffalo Soldiers. My friends in their room hanging word up posters. This is my tip to pull back the curtains and show you the life of a young man.
This is my life. Ain't no way that I can change it at all. Even if I tried, that's why I tried. To go tear the wall down, let you all get a peek inside. But once you're inside, I guarantee you won't like everything that, you'll find. But what you'll find is the grace of the Lord, cause his hands are all over my life. It's my life.
Different. Acting like Malcolm X, got my boys tripping. I get silent treatment, so I start listening. Root of the issue, I just want some significance. If that means stuggin', I'll listen to pop. Smoke a little weed, getting drunk up on the block. Doing petty crimes, running from the cops. Knowing pops would kill me if I ever got caught. My man got shot, days later he's dead. It's running through my head, we all allergic to lead. I'll never ever forget what my oldest brother said. You could be a dreamer, but don't live in your bed. So I left that life, and I went to college. My God became money, sex, status, and knowledge. And if I didn't get it, then I'll go insane. I guess that's the result of life with bad
aim. It's my life. Ain't no way that I can change it at all. Even if I tried, that's why I tried. To go tear the wall down, let you all get a peek inside. But once you're inside, I guarantee you won't like everything that, you'll find. But what you'll find is the grace of the Lord, cause his hands are all over my life. It's my life.
Nice saying, they taught us to aim for nothing and look, we hit it dead on the
it's
button.
It's my life.
Nice saying, they taught us to aim for nothing and look, we hit it dead on the
it's
button.
My life.
They want a third chapter. Sit back and listen. Like Matt Damon, I was born for this mission. I heard a crazy message about the world's hero and how it was a righteous kill, Robert De Niro, and how he got punished when he did zero just to bring the cure to some sin-sick people. Did some research, I found none equal. Perfection wrapped in flesh to dead evil. I guess my biggest issue, I thought I was a Christian, but now I got a passion for Christ, Mel Gibson. I asked my man if he knew his way to heaven. He said, sure, they open doors around 7. They close at 3, so go get your blessing. I guess it's my fault for assuming this understanding. He knows what he needs, he's scared to explore why. Eternity's on his heart, Christ hits the bullseye.
And we are back to Teens Talk Truth with your hosts, AJ and Alex.
All right, we're back. We're back. Christian rap always hit different. Always does. Always Amen. Does. Okay. So is it hard to get victims to open up about their experiences?
There are a lot of times when it is. And it's each victim process the trauma differently. Some may open up and some may not. Some people take it to the grave. Some never open up. You know, I meet people who said, so why did they wait for 30 years? Why did they do that? It's whenever they're comfortable. And you can't force them. I've had victims who came to me after they saw the law enforcement. So they already give them their statement and everything. And when they got to me, it's like, I told the police already and I'm not talking again. Mm-hmm. So I still have to care for them and do, you know, ask simple questions that they will answer because they guide the process. Mm-hmm. So there is no forcing.
How do you, Like, is there a way to keep people from shutting themselves in?
That is a difficult one, because it's up to them. And what I would say to, like, if you're a family member or a friend who is aware of someone who is shut in, just be there for them. Be a listener. Provide the resources, research and get the resources and give it to them. Because until they are ready, then you can't. Just let them know you're there to support when they need you. Of course, if you notice that they're like harming themselves, then that's something you may have to intervene depending on what it is. But, and point out gently, okay, notice you're doing so and so, like they're getting into drugs and alcohol, maybe because of this unresolved trauma that you went through, you know, probably time you get some help so you can take care of yourself and not do this. Yes, it's up to them. They have to want to get the treatment, unfortunately.
So, like, what are some signs of people being shut in?
Don't want to do things that they were doing before. They don't want to enjoy social engagements as they normally do. They may just stay at home, drop out of school, not going to church. Promiscuity. Drugs and alcohol. And some people may continue to do all the things they normally do, but don't enjoy it as much. Sometimes you can't tell. Because I was going about my business because I had to. Whereas others will just withdraw and not go out.
You use a big word for the teenagers who may not know it. What do you mean by promiscuity?
Oh. Oh, yeah. Thank you for asking. Promiscuity is like sexual immorality. They'll be just going around with different partners, having sex, and not being mindful of making good choices, making good judgment in terms of their sexual behavior.
So some people turn to sex in order to hide.
See, that is like, now someone took that away from me. I didn't have the power to fight back. They took it from me. Now I'm in charge of this. They're getting it, but I'm the one who is in charge. Did you, like, it's like, that's your way of coping.
Okay.
Yeah. There are others who also go on to victimize others. They become perpetrators.
Wow.
Because now I'm have the power now. Someone overpowered me and did this to me. Now I have the power. That's how their interpretation of how to get their power back. Mm-hmm. So those are maladaptive behaviors.
Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a hard question, but it's hard to put in words, but like how.
If those are maladaptive ways, what's the opposite of that?
Yeah. What's a good way to
seek therapy? Yeah, it's like seek therapy, social groups, talk to someone, you know, make healthy choices, that proper eating and exercising, journaling, meditation, you know, all the things that are the opposite of the maladaptive behaviors.
Right.
Yes.
So, you mentioned spirituality. How did finding that help you through your journey?
You know, it's funny. I grew up in the church. I remember when I was very young, my aunt Irma would, like, 5 a.m., we would be in prayer meeting. We'll fall asleep on the floor. And over the years, you know, we step away from that. We didn't go to church regularly. And it's funny going back to that prior reading Bible. You know, it's amazing when you believe and lean on God and trust him, how much that belief and knowing that he's there for you and he'll bind your wounds and heal you. You know, it doesn't matter where you have been or where your thoughts are. God is always there. If you feel distant, he didn't move, you moved. And when I came to that realization, so I went back to what I knew and what I practiced growing up.
Is it hard getting people to, well, getting victims to realize that there are people who can help them and that it's okay to open up and speak out?
Some, because they've lost trust, especially if when they were victimized, no one believed them. So as a sexual assault nurse examiner, one of the first things we do is reassure the victims, I believe you. I believe you. And that, I remember I had one young lady, she was in her 30s. And when I said that to her in the hospital, she started crying. Because as a 5-year-old, her mom's boyfriend had molested her and her mother never believed her. So here she was victimized again. And for the first time speaking out, someone said, I believe you. So she was overwhelmed. So that does affect the victim. If when they initially share their story, if someone said, I don't believe you, or they are blamed, then that may, you know, cause them to shut down and not want to speak to anyone else.
So with that, how, like, I guess how, another, I can't find the words.
Well, I have a question while he's thinking it through. What would you say, because you and I both went through this as kids, what would you say to a child who is going through this now? You know, they've had someone molest them or rape them, especially if they're males, because, you know, it happens to them too, and boys are even less likely to tell than girls.
Yes.
What would you say to them at this point in their lives if they're thinking about keeping it to themselves?
Well, it's okay to open up. It's never too late to get healing. Mm-hmm. It's never too late to get healing. Mm-hmm. And it's better to open up. It can be anonymous. There are resources out there. Say they may not want to talk to a friend or family. They may want to keep it private, but there are resources out there. You know, there are online groups that you can talk to by phone. They are coaches like me you can talk to. They may want to talk to a friend if they want to disclose openly. But sure, it's never too late. I remember a few months ago, we were talking on Clubhouse, and there was a lady who reached out. She was brutally raped 30 years ago, and she was speaking about it for the very first time.
Wow.
So, yes. And that begins your healing. Yes.
Wow. What if it's still happening?
When you say what is still happening?
Like, what if the victim is, you know, still being raped?
Yes. Like, it's a kid in the household with, you know, a parent or uncle or aunt, or, you know, going to a babysitter on a regular basis.
And there are so many cases like that where people are victimized for years and years and years. Mm-hmm. I encourage to tell someone. And a lot of times because there may be dependent, it's a parent, they may be financially dependent. And it's, oh, my heart breaks when I think of situations like that, because I read off stuff like that all the time. And I know in my neighborhood of when I was growing up of things like that, that has occurred. And I would encourage, you know, to tell someone, mm-hmm. maybe not be someone in the home, but at school, the counselor. Mm-hmm. You may be afraid they're going to call your parent and you're going to get punished, but mm-hmm. tell someone. And if the first person you tell don't believe, don't stop until you tell.
And this is, you know, this is sort of my wheelhouse too, because I used to represent the state in child abuse and neglect cases. And so what a lot of kids don't know is they can call themselves, in their state, there's a hotline to report, you know, child abuse. Right. It doesn't just have to be with a parent. There are, that it will be investigated if it's someone outside your home or, you know, a different relative or friend or whatever. And in regards to telling a teacher, a counselor at school, she's telling you that because those people are what's called mandatory reporters. So they have, as part of their jobs, they have a legal responsibility to report child abuse. If they suspect it, and most definitely if you tell them. And so they can help you to report it to the person or authorities who can stop it from happening.
Yeah. So not just, yes, I'm glad you brought that up. Not just medical professionals and those in your school and legal system, they're mandatory reporters of, abuse of the elderly and children. And anybody who may be like mentally challenged, yes, mm-hmm. any suspicion.
And there's also a child abuse hotline, a national child abuse hotline.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And there's a national organization, RAIN.org, mm-hmm. that, yes. There's so many organizations out there. I'm so glad that the conversation is changing. And although not enough, there are more resources for this kind of help than was there before. Mm-hmm. The light is being shown on perpetrators. You know, the shame belongs to them. So instead of the victims being feeling ashamed and angry and guilty, let's turn the light on them. Let's break the silence.
Mm-hmm. And for those who are, you know, dealing with it, I just want kids to know that, you know, you can go to you can look it up online, National Child Abuse Hotline. They've got a way for you to chat with somebody, or to send a text message to somebody, but you can also call to talk. And that number is 800-422-4453 if you need it. That's 800-422-4453. And if you want to go to the website, it's childhelphotline.org.
Yes. And if someone you know, because they're in our colleges and universities, the sexual assault is rampant. Mm-hmm. So if you're aware of that going on, mm-hmm. you know, that's not something to keep a secret.
Exactly. Exactly. Exactly.
What are some other ways that people can help victims besides just like, listening to them and like getting, you know, them to open up and go to somebody who can actually help? Like, what are some, you know, different things people can do to help?
Find out from them what they need, you know, be there for them, you know, hold space for them. Because you can't force something on them that, you know, you can't force them to accept the help if they don't want to. So besides making them aware, I'm here for you when you're ready. You know, if you see that they need a meal, you can provide them with a meal. If you can do financial help if they're in need. So things like that you can do, but forcing them to open up, you can't. Or forcing them to seek therapy or, no, it's not gonna happen. It's gonna be when they are ready. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because think of, a victim, a child victim who may not disclose until they're an adult. Mm-hmm. So when they disclose an adult, that's a little child that's coming out. Mm-hmm. It's not an adult that's disclosing. They are disclosing as a child, although they're in an adult body. So it's a different dynamic. Mm-hmm. So it may be liberating to be disclosing and getting help, but at the same time, it may be traumatizing also, if you get that. Mm-hmm. Because the little child self is still in there being traumatized because they have not gotten the therapy yet.
Mm-hmm. So it's not just helping the adult, is also helping the child. You
know, exactly. You know. It's twofold. Mm-hmm.
So for those who don't know, where can people get access to your book?
My book is available on Amazon and wherever books are sold online.
And how can people get in touch with you?
I'm on all social media platforms as Marie McKenzie. My business page is Are You Shut In? And my email address is MarieLMcKenzie@gmail.com.
Well, thank you, Miss McKenzie, for being
here. Thank you so much for having me. I enjoy this discussion.
And you're a blessing. Every time you're on, you're a blessing. Thank you so
thank
much.
Thank you. I know this is not an easy topic, but as I said, I can't shut up.
Right, right. And my thing is, you know, I have sons. You know, we have been really careful about, you know, trying to teach them from an early age about their bodies and what's a good touch, you know, for somebody touching them, as well as what's appropriate for them when they're touching other people. And, you know, it is almost, you know, people take it for granted that it happens to, you know, to little boys, probably as much as it happens to young girls. So I guess my thing is, do you see this a lot, you know, with male patients, in your line of work?
Male are less likely to report. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I had one male victim who was molested as a child. At 9 years old, he was now in his 30s and was raped. Mm-hmm. And the one thing he said was, he was at the party and the man who raped him, he said, he looked just like my uncle who molested me when I was a child. Mm. So when he held on to me, I just went with him just as I did when I was a child.
Mm. Wow. Yeah. Wow. And I just want to make sure that, you know, the male teens out there know that that's not something that you have to keep inside. Right. That's, and a lot of people, just me being personal with the teens who are listening, a lot of people let it define who they are. I had a male and a female sexual abuser when I was growing up. Mm-hmm. And it can be really confusing, make you really confused about who you are and,
yes,
you know, what, who you like and what you don't like. But you don't let that dictate to you who you are. And I think people get lost in that. They get, it's very confusing. So I can imagine, it doesn't surprise me, the outcomes.
Yes.
For a lot of people, because it's hard to separate who you are from what happened, because we are made to enjoy sex. And I think that is the power that the abuser has over those who are victimized. Mm-hmm. They know that. They know that sex is pleasurable no matter how old you are. Babies know that touching themselves in a certain spot brings some pleasure. Mm-hmm. And so that, you know, and so I had a friend of mine who's an attorney. Her son on the ultrasound was holding his penis and they thought, she and the doctor thought it was the funniest thing in the world. Mm-hmm. But, you know, even babies know that that area has a, you know, mm-hmm. that's a special area. So abusers definitely know that. And I think they try to make those who are victimized feel like you're complicit in it.
Right.
Because of the way your body responds to certain touches or whatnot that exactly. have been forced on you that you didn't ask for. And that's not a sign that you wanted to participate in that. That's not a sign of who you are and what you are supposed to be. You get to yes. choose that. That's your decision.
Yes.
And I hope that helps some kids out there who may be struggling with that, because I know what that feels like.
Yes. And another confusion is like the young boys or the young girls who are raped by female, or the young boys raped by male, they'd be saying, am I gay? You know, does that mean I'm gay? No, it doesn't. Right. So that's one of the reasons why they don't report, because they're thinking, okay, this is going to make me gay, or this is going to do this, or this is going to do that. Mm-hmm. Speak up and get help. Mm-hmm. And other things that we don't hear a lot of talk about is sibling rape.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm.
And I'm not talking about, when did you look at each other?
Well, that's just not something that they understand me. I know exactly what you're talking yes. about, because
there's a lot of confusion. I'm not talking about childhood curiosity. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about one sibling going beyond the line mm-hmm. and forcing mm-hmm. abusing the other.
Right. Being a perpetrator, a sexual perpetrator. And those are very difficult cases.
Very difficult.
Because you have to legally, when I was in practice, you legally had to separate the perpetrator from the victim. So that meant very often that the family had to be separated. Who's going to take, because you're talking about minors usually,
yes.
Or very often. So you've got one parent supposed to take a child, you know, away from the victim child, because, you know, imagine what it would be like to have to stay with your rapist on a regular basis, or right. somebody otherwise abusing you, whether it's physical abuse or emotional, mental abuse on a regular basis. That's what you're forcing
right.
on this kid in the name of the quote unquote family. And so you had, in my experience as an attorney, trying these cases, parents, wouldn't leave boyfriends who had kids, or husbands who had kids, you know, brought into the home, who perpetrated on their own children. And even, especially when you've got siblings of the same blood, it's incredibly hard. And so imagine, you know, if you will, if you're out there listening with your kid, or you're an adult, and you're in this situation, if it were you and you were raped by somebody, say somebody you didn't know,
right.
but you had to be stuck with that person every single day of your life. That's what you're doing to your kid. And then they will wonder why their rights, parental rights, will have to be terminated. Well, because you won't help your child. And I right. know you want your family to be together. I get that. But you got to think of what is going on with this kid right now.
Yeah.
Anyway. That's one of my pet peeves.
and some parents will like keep it to themselves. They yeah. may not report
yeah,
because, yes. So then both children grew up, may choose maladaptive behaviors because there's no treatment for the perpetrator or right. treatment for the victim.
Exactly.
Yeah. And therapy can help, because that doesn't mean because they abuse their sibling or another child that they're predators. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. they're of the age where, you know, get them some treatment. That's not something to push under the rug.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's not something to push under the rug. Exactly. So pedophiles, rapists, they're not always running around on the streets. They pray where they're trusted. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In our homes, in our schools, in our churches.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
In our, yes.
Exactly.
Let's call it out.
Right, right.
So in position, people in position of trust. So the victims do not always report. They keep it to themselves because they sometimes they want to protect the perpetrator.
Exactly. And that is the thing that gets me. And yeah. I know, you know, we're keeping you a little longer than one, but I just have to say this. As a person who tried these cases, because as somebody who's been through this, I wanted to help the kids first and foremost, because I know what it's like for the family to rally around the abuser and you be stuck there. With the person, you know, who is hurting you over and over and over again. That isn't the way that it is supposed to be. You rally around the person who is hurting. I mean, you know, what if you were sick, you know, what, and needed help, and instead everybody ignored you and went to take care of just the healthy people in the family. That's not what we do when we can see physically that somebody's hurt. Well, you know that something has happened to this child, and they need you to support them. They need you to believe them. They need you to get them the help that they need. They need you to get them away from this person who hurt them, and stay away from that person. But instead, it's a big secret. And that has a profound effect on the children, especially if you're talking about a child perpetrator, because you're basically letting them know that this is okay.
Exactly. And then they'll go into adulthood doing the same thing.
Exactly. So anyway, I just want the teens to hear that, because it's hard to know what to do. If you're not believed by the people who you live with, then you've got other means. Again, your teachers are mandated reporters. If you tell somebody at school, or if you go to the doctor,
and
you're in there with your doctor or nurse by yourself, they're mandated reporters. All you have to do is say it. And it's going to get handled.
Yes.
But Marie,
don't shut up.
Exactly. Your anthology talks about this too, right? Because you talked about your book. What is the anthology before we go?
Yeah, the anthology, Are You Lit? Leaders Intentionally Trailblazing, where 10 Christian coaches wrote about their business. My chapter is on my coaching platform, Are You Shut In? So it was released in December 6, 2022. So bestseller, number one Amazon bestseller. And the 10 coaches of us all have healing ministries. So yes, Are You Lit? Available in Amazon in ebook and paperback.
Do you think that the teenagers can benefit from reading the book?
Absolutely, because there are resources for everything, yes. There's resources.
Okay. And I apologize for kind of taking over at the end. This is, y'all.
Nice.
I feel really strongly about this topic of conversation, as Marie knows.
Oh, I can tell. I was smiling when I heard you talking because I can hear the passion in your, you're almost like angry.
Yes.
we don't want to get between us.
I don't blame you.
That used to come out in the courtroom.
It's like, if they ever touch my boys, they're like the lion.
Yes. And it would come out in the courtroom too. I mean, I had knocked down drag outs with attorneys, especially on this thing that we are just talking about. There was a family who had, you know, a couple of kids, one perped on the other. And me and the attorney were on both sides, different sides of the fences. He was pro-family, which was made him the perfect attorney to represent them, because I couldn't have done it. Mm-hmm. And I was for the state. And, you know, he confronted me after court saying I was, you know, tearing the family apart. And I'm like, you're putting this little girl in a situation where she is constantly having to deal with a person who is hurting her. And I mean, we went at it, and people didn't know that when they got mad at me in court, I took it as a compliment. I was called a B word. Now I'm like, I did my job very well today. because you're not happy with how this turned out. That means I did what I was supposed to do. That you may as well have said good job. that's what you may as well said, but that's how passionately I felt.
Exactly.
I still do feel about it. And when it happens to, you know, when it's something that is personal to you, you guys, exactly. You just kind of can't help it. But anyway, William, I'm sorry. You were talking.
No, that's okay. I'm enjoying the conversation. And I'm sure you're going to have that same passion tomorrow. It sounds like a prelude or a build up, to tomorrow's Boomerang Show. You know, we have, the former investigator from the San Bernardino Sheriff's Department back on, Mike Ward, tomorrow. And this is our continuation of Refuse to Be a Victim. Remember, we were talking about how to stay safe during the holiday season. Going to talk about how to stay safe. Okay.
You know what? We need to have him on Teens Talk Truth.
Well, yeah. He'll be glad, I'm sure. Yeah. He'll be honored to join the boys. He'll be, these awesome. Young men, rather. He'll be awesome. Honored. And he'll be on awesome. Tomorrow. Ladies and gentlemen, it's probably going to be one of the most important shows that we do of 2023. How to protect yeah. yourself throughout the year. We want you to have fun. We want you to have an abundant life. But the only way you can do that, if you are safe. Yeah. And we're going to do everything we can to promote that. Also, Sergeant Kennard Moffitt, he'll be back with us. Along with awesome. You and Dr. Demery, Dr. Sims, and Danny Tisdale. Folks, you don't want to miss this show. It comes on at 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 5 o'clock Central, and 6 on the East Coast. StudioWBuzz.com. You can find us. We have a host of ways that you can reach us. You can download from your Apple App Store, studio.w. Android is Studio W. We're available on Apple CarPlay, Google Play, Alexa. Also internationally, just type in for your friends overseas, StudioW.buzz. Internationally, StudioWBuzz.com. Please leave a comment. Let the young men know what do you think about their show. Good job, gentlemen. Good job. And Coach Marie McKenzie, thank you so much for that. And we will see you soon, and I will see you tomorrow.
William, one more thing. I forgot. Thank you, Coach Angela Taylor Fisher, for the awesome podcast interview with AJ and Alex on the Persevering with Power Moments with Pastor Angela. It was awesome.
Yes, I was there.
Praise the Lord. Praise the Lord. So thank you so much. Please do everybody go listen to the podcast, like and share. It was awesome.
And would you send that to me? We'll place it on the website under our podcast.
I've been trying to find the actual feed. I've never been able to find the feed, but I did send, I think the link with the promo, and then I sent, the longer link with their bios. But as soon as I get a copy of the recording, I will definitely
I'll try to find the link. I did share it to my page that night.
Thank you. Cause I couldn't find it that night and I hadn't been able to find it at all since then.
Well, send it to me and we'll post it on our website and also on our Spotify channel.
Awesome. Awesome. That's right. We're on Spotify now.
Spotify and iTunes. Absolutely. So anyway, great show. I'll see you tomorrow. Thanks again, Coach Marie and gentlemen. Wonderful job. Wonderful job.
Thank you.
Enjoy your day.
And Alex. Thank you, Ann.
You're welcome.
You've been listening to Teens Talk Truth on Studio W, The Buzz, your global radio network, 24 days, 7 days a week. Enjoy.